Back together again, you and I chatting it up round the wireless on this Monday, January 6, 2025 on Connecticut Today. I looked at a controversial school grading system being used by some big Connecticut school systems. CBS News correspondent Jim Krasula talked about former President Jimmy Carter lying in repose at the Carter Presidential Library before his remains are moved to the U.S. Capitol. And Connecticut News Junkie columnist Terry Cowgill dropped by to chat about the future of a major Connecticut newspaper.
You know, the late great Hall of Fame catcher for the New York Yankees, Yogi Berra, always had or has, and we still use them a lot in our daily lives because they're funny and they're true. You can look up a list of things Yogi Berra used to say, right? It ain't over till it's over. That's the famous one, and that pertains in sports and life and whatever. Here's one. If the world were perfect, it wouldn't be. We made too many wrong mistakes. Yeah, I like that. Baseball is 90% mental. The other half is physical. Okay. Here's my favorite for a restaurant. I guess Yogi was referring to a restaurant at one time. Nobody goes there anymore. It's too crowded. That's great. But here's one that our lawmakers in Connecticut could use. And there is a startling, and I mean startling, story today from our buddy, our pal Mark Fitch at the Connecticut Inside Investigator that you should all look up. And it has to do with grading students. Yogi had a phrase, a Yogiism, that's loosely recounted as, you can observe a lot just by watching. Well, yeah, Yogi, yeah, but you can observe a lot by just watching, or just by watching. It gets mangled here and there. And I thought of that immediately as I read this story that thankfully was highlighted on the Capitol Report by our buddy, our pal, Tom Dudchick. Ready for this? Now, again, I say this to all the fine legislators in Connecticut. You should observe this and watch this, and you can tell a lot, as Yogi said, just by watching. And what we're seeing is, and I hate to say this, I really do, but maybe it'll get somebody's attention here. And for you people who are school teachers, who are not school teachers but wannabe, who were school teachers and retired, I'd love to get your input on this, because I guess you'll be pumping your fist at this little bit of an expose here, which I didn't know. So I've learned a lot by observing and watching. I wonder if our lawmakers in Hartford will. Because, you know, the majority in Hartford, as they get ready for the new session this week, there's going to be stuff about green energy. Oh, there's going to be stuff about EVs. There's going to be stuff about fiscal guardrails. There's going to be stuff about, oh, we need to make abortion even more widely. Hey, let's do drive-through abortions. Hold on, ma'am. Lie back. We'll do this quickly. You know, we need more gun laws. But I wonder if the men and women, the fine, learned, literati, cognoscenti, in the General Assembly will care about the dummies that we are graduating from any of our schools. And I only use that with all the love in the world, because we are. What are we observing? What are we watching here, as the great Lawrence Peter Barra used to say? Is anybody watching? This story today by my buddy, my pal Mark Fitch, and I'll effort to have him on this week on this. Students in Hartford can skip class and still pass under a controversial grading policy. And we sit there. You and I, we muse on this radio station, and other hosts muse across the state as to why are there still, after we went after this stuff, after we attacked this stuff, starting in, geez, the early to late 50s, for God's sake. Three generations now, we're trying to rid parts of our major cities of these unending pockets of poverty and this unending and festering underclass. And I don't mean that in a bad way as to people's character, but if you're not educated, you're 10 steps down already, starting. Will anybody take any action on this in the General Assembly? And the refreshing thing here is it appears there are some teachers advocates and teachers union people who are upset about this, that we engage in this soft bigotry. Hartford students can skip class and still pass under a controversial grading policy. Do you know that? Honest to God. When I first opened this story at 11 o'clock this morning, I said, no, this can't be right. Mark must have screwed up on this. He didn't. Students in Hartford Public Schools. Now, remember, this is the school system that's now, I guess, being sued because there was a special needs young woman there who basically was, quote unquote, graduated and couldn't read or write. So this comes on the heels of that. Students in Hartford Public Schools and other school systems around Connecticut can. Are you ready for this? Wait a minute. I'm going to give you a break here. Take a little break here. I want you to swallow what you're chewing right now because you'll choke when you hear this. Keep two hands on the wheel if you're in the car in any sort of vehicle, because if you don't, you're liable to steer into a curb or a guardrail. When I read what I'm going to read here in just a moment. And then we sit back and we wonder, why are there these cells, or as the literati like to say, the ones that actually did graduate, say census tracts? We don't say neighborhoods anymore because that's, you know, we have to say census tracts. Yes, because God, admit, we can get more federal money that way because neighborhoods is really a, you know, bourgeois kind of thing. So we'll do that coming back. This will shock you. No wonder why, sadly, we just tell these kids, many in urban black and Hispanic schools and neighborhoods, move along, nothing to see. Oh, you wanted an education. Oh, silly you. So how long has it been? Pretty much, I guess, mid to late 50s, maybe early 60s. So it's what, three generations now? 60-something years where we've been battling these, what they call, you know, what people call the pockets of urban poverty, which sadly are still around. You know, the cities in the state are doing a bit better here, but you have them stubbornly hanging around in Bridgeport, in Hartford, in New Haven. And there is just a, maybe it's not that big, I don't know how many people are involved, but there is just a, I hate to use the word underclass, but there's a cadre of individuals who find it tough to better themselves. And we tie that in and we hear that in with what? Education. If you get an education, you have a shot. We're always told by the people with the multiple degrees, the doctorates, the bachelor's degrees, the master's degrees, the juris doctorates, whatever. We're always told, well, hey, you get that education that you can get by free education, and you're good. You can have a better way to get out of a bad situation. But apparently, we are seeing some soft bigotry here in the state. Again, this piece by Mark Fitch in the Connecticut Inside Investigator. Students in Hartford Public Schools and other school systems around Connecticut can skip most of their schoolwork or not attend school most of the year and still earn a passing score to move on to the next grade. That's under a controversial grading policy called Minimum 50, which, get this, and for you folks who are teachers out there, I'd love to have you vent here, if you'd like, 333-9422. The Minimum 50 policy forbids teachers from giving a numerical score of less than 50, wait a minute now, wait for it, even if the student didn't do the test. Even if they didn't turn in their assignment, or even if they didn't show up for class. Come on. The policy, Mark reports here, has been in place in the Hartford Public Schools for roughly 7 years, but has more recently been taken up by school systems also in New Haven, Waterbury, and Middletown. But in Hartford, which recently made national news for graduating a student who could not read or write, the president of the Hartford Teachers Union has been speaking out against the policy. Good for them. In a statement before the Hartford Board of Education, the president of the Hartford Federation of Teachers, Carol Gale, said the use of the minimum 50 grading policy, get this, this is one of my favorite quotes here, quote, perpetuates the bigotry of low expectations, unquote. Amen. We can't expect those black and Hispanic kids to do better. Why not? Well, you know. She said it is detrimental to students, frustrating for teachers, and should be ended. At a February 2024 Board of Education meeting, Carol Gale said, quote, students can earn a grade of 50 for doing little to nothing, which creates a contradictory work ethic. This policy allows students to pass courses when they have not actually learned the material or skills, ill-preparing them for post-graduation success. You think? Is anybody in the General Assembly paying attention to this? The Hartford Public School System's grading guidance indicates that, quote, the use of the minimum 50 as an F grade is for all marking periods except the final marking period. The midterm exam and the final exam are the earned grade. The final marking period shall use the earned grade in calculation for the final course grade. This includes semester or other length courses. The final marking period shall be the earned grade. Gale, now again, this is not some right-wing leaning homeschooling person here. Gale says the policy creates tensions between administrators and teachers who are required to, get this, folks, get this. It creates tensions between administrators and teachers who are required to overwrite any student grades that are less than 49 with a grade of 50, therefore making it easier for them to get passed along to the next grade. How about that? How about that? I have an idea. Instead of green energy, instead of EV charging stations, geez, I don't know, instead of screwing people who want to work for tips plus the sub-minimum wage in restaurants, instead of doing all that, maybe the fine Einsteins, Mr. and Ms. Einsteins in the General Assembly can start screaming about this, that at least in Hartford, they're graduating students who aren't learning. Hartford school system made national news in the final months of 2024 when Alicia Ortiz revealed she had graduated from Hartford Public High School and could not read or write. You think? Social promotion, folks, it's a conga line. We don't get, well, wait a minute, how do we know that they learned anything? Doesn't matter. Can't do anything under 50. Man, oh man. Are you serious? But then again, this is why we, at least in some ways, have this permanent underclass in this country. And we are failing them, boys and girls especially, in some of these school systems. Because I guess, according to what this says in this story, this is going on in Hartford, Waterbury, and Middletown, among others in the state. Crazy. Terry in Fairfield leads us off. Hello, Terry. How are you?
Hi. Boy, I have so much to say. I'll try to speak quickly.
Okay.
Because I get so tired of call-in talk show hosts talking about things that they really, really are not clear on the facts. Can I explain to you the purpose of testing and grading?
The purpose
is not to find out who's smart and who's not smart. You teach a lesson.
Yeah.
You prepare an assessment or a test.
Okay.
You give it to your students.
Yeah.
You look at what happened. For students who got 100% and finished that test very quickly, you try to make the next assignment for that student a little bit more challenging.
Okay.
For a student who did not pass, it's not a matter of saying XX, big red X's on the paper, and your job is done. I feel very confident. This kid's not smart. I marked them all wrong. That's not what teachers are doing. What they should be doing is looking and saying, okay, what happened? why didn't he get a good grade?
Oh, I agree with that.
He didn't get a good grade because he didn't understand the lesson.
But Terry,
he's not a good reader.
This is not in any way pillaring teachers. I'm not. In fact, you can hear in what
I
read.
You're pillaring the whole education system.
Well, wait a minute then. Well, excuse me. How do you agree with this system? Because the teachers union president in Hartford says...
Well, absolutely not.
Okay.
I do not agree with it.
So
but
we're
let
not...
me explain. Well, let me explain what you do about this.
Well, Terry, do me a favor. I'm going to put you on hold here because I do want to hear from you, but I have to go to news here. I'm not saying this is the fault of the teachers. It's the fault, though, of the superintendents and the General Assembly who are looking the other way on this. And this is why, sadly, we after decades and decades and decades and decades and decades and tens and hundreds of millions of dollars, we still have, sadly, in the greatest country in the world, a permanent educational underclass. And you know what? It's got to stop. Yeah, a little slippery out there, so be careful. These squalls can dump some blinding snow for a few seconds, and then you go slipping and sliding. What is it? The first snowfall, the first measurable snowfall. It's always the toughest, right? Because people, oh, wait a minute, this snow stuff, I got to slow down. Yes, you do. Especially if you're still one of the people, the dwindling few, who have a rear-wheel drive car. So it's like when I worked a few months in Vegas, and in the middle of the summer, you'd have a flash thunderstorm that would last about, I don't know, 20, 30 seconds, maybe a minute or so. And of course, then the water mixed with all the grease and gasoline and oil on the roads out there that was getting baked under the sun. And it was like watching people, you know, drive on Vaseline. I was telling my traffic reporter once in the morning, really? All these accidents for 30 seconds of rain? She goes, yep. All right, 203-333-9422. We're going to bring back Terry now in Fairfield. We're talking about the story that startled me. And again, if you're a teacher, you probably know this, but this is the kind of stuff that we don't want to confront here. And trust me, teachers have it tough. Believe me, I know. I have friends of mine who teach either on a part-time basis, a sub-basis, or full-time. Some who've retired, but the stories they give me. But this is interesting now. Students in Hartford Public Schools and other school systems around the state can skip most of their work and not attend school most of the year, okay, and still earn a passing score to move on to the next grade, kind of social promotion here, and you've even got the criticism coming from the Hartford Federation of Teachers, the teachers union president in Hartford, and she said the current policy, quote, one of my favorite phrases, George W. Bush used to use this all the time, you're perpetuating the bigotry of low expectations. Terry, go right ahead. Wanted to give you a little more time now, so go right ahead.
Okay, I'll speak quickly.
No, take your time.
Let's look at what our goal is. Our goal is to graduate students that are proficient in certain skills, mm-hmm. and job ready,
sure.
or further education ready.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Okay, that should be our goal. Does it help to just say this student missed so many days, didn't do his work, didn't pass a test, he fails. He stays back, that's not going to help. The other thing, social promotion, that's not going to help. So you happen to mention Waterbury, and I'm a retired Waterbury teacher.
Yep.
On elementary level, here's what we did. When teachers saw students were missing a lot of school, failing a lot of not keeping up with the rest of the class,
mm-hmm.
we did what called a referral. This student's been referred. Let's see what's wrong. We have a team meeting. I'm a special ed teacher. We'd have a regular ed teacher. We'd have a social worker. We'd have a principal. Sometimes we'd have the nurse, the school nurse.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, what's going on with this kid? Why is he missing? We get the social worker involved. We find out there's a problem at home. Mom went in for surgery.
Mm-hmm.
She's not feeling well. Dad's not in the picture.
And
right
Terry,
now.
I've heard that. I've heard that from friends of mine who are teachers like you. Absolutely.
Yeah, we got to the bottom of it. That's what needs to be done, Paul. And when you talk, I'm sorry, and I'm not being critical,
mm-hmm.
but you use very disparaging, the literati, the people that are so smart. You know what? That's one of the problems in this country. People look down on education. How sad. I'm an old lady now, but let me tell you, my mom and dad, they talked education all the time.
No, and Terry, don't get me wrong. When I say the literati, now, you don't have to name names or anything, but I'm sure, Terry, through your career, right, you were told stuff that you could do and you could not do by somebody. Maybe they did it 20 or 30 years ago. But I'm sure, Terry, because it's this way in every business, right? There's an upper level that says, oh, Terry, just do this. Right. Go ahead and do this. Just and you must have been at some times seething. Right. And said, well, no, this is not working, or we have better ideas here. But, you know, Terry, that once you get to the Board of Ed level or the State Board of Education, sometimes they don't want to hear from the people in the trenches like you.
Well, on the other hand, though, Paul, what you have to keep really what you have to keep in mind is, let's go back to pre-K.
Mm-hmm.
There should be, in this country, pre-K for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Kindergarten students are expected to read by December. They should be reading short sentences. Kids that never had any pre-K, they don't know where to hang their lunch pail off. They don't know how to be in a group.
Yeah.
They've never been in a school situation before.
Yeah.
And you've got parents, you talk about,
oh,
parents are not involved. Parents are not involved. I've had parents. I'm just going to tell you one quick story.
Sure.
Before I was teaching during COVID,
okay,
and I got from one of the regular education teachers, I'm a special education teacher,
yeah,
that mother, when she signs them on in the morning, she never signs them on until 9:30, and then she was like half asleep. God knows what she's doing. Well, Paul, I talked to the mom.
Yeah.
I said, is something wrong?
What's going on?
What's going on?
Yeah.
She said, Mrs. S., I work in a convalescent home. Nobody will come in with COVID because we don't have masks.
Yeah.
So I've always worked 3 to 11, but now I have to stay to 11 to 7. I can't leave those old people with no one to care for them.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, I take a scarf and wrap it around my mouth over and over and over again because we don't have. So you know what? Before people jump to think, why is this kid staying out? Oh, he's staying out of school? That's it. Mark him wrong. Tell him he's got to stay back. He can't graduate. Try to find what's the issue.
Sure.
Can we help?
Absolutely.
That's all I'm saying. And you know what, Paul, when you say set the standards high, you have to teach where the kid is. You get a kid in fourth grade that can't read, you start teaching them how to read. You don't
yeah.
say the curriculum says this. Everybody's got to be doing that. You have to meet the kid where he is. Let's grade on improvement. He spelled 50 words right on a big spelling assessment at the beginning of the year, and now he spells 75 right. Good. Let's give him some credit. He didn't get 100.
Yeah.
But he improved.
But do you, but Terry, I guess the question is, and I applaud, and believe me, I fully believe every single thing you told me. I've never taught a day in my life. I've lectured at a couple of colleges just on an offhand here and there for some friends of mine, but those are college kids. But having said that, one thing that does get me upset, though, is exactly what this union head in Hartford said. Well, you know, we got to be careful about keeping expectations. And you mentioned this, Terry. There are reasonable expectations and about looking maybe at kids who are saying, well, you know, we're going to keep these low because. And that's my fear is that we're never. I mean, Terry, it's been like 60, 70 years here. We got to get out of this eventually. I know part of it is the parents. I get you, Terry. But my God, when is this going to end? If it ever ends. You
but
know what I mean?
Part of it, you know what? You got to look at society as a whole.
Oh, yeah.
We have kids that come to school hungry.
Oh, yeah, I know.
Their parents are working. God
yep.
knows. Believe me, I'm telling you the truth. Working parents that can't feed their family.
Oh, I know, Terry. I have said numerous times on this show, every kid in every public high school in Connecticut, I don't care whether it's in Greenwich or in Bridgeport, they should have access to a breakfast. They just should. They should.
Yeah.
They should.
Yeah.
Terry,
yeah.
Thank you. Appreciate the input.
All right. Okay.
All right. Thanks,
thank
Terry.
You.
Appreciate it. Yeah. Listen, folks, it's complicated. It is. I get it. I understand it. But when does this get better? That's the whole thing. When does this get better? And you constantly hear, right, from Governor Lamont, Lieutenant Governor Bisewitz, the economic people, hey, we've got these thousands of jobs here in Connecticut. Oh, yeah, but they're not being filled. We don't have the skill, the educated workers for this. In the meantime, the General Assembly is going to start lecturing us about green energy and hybrid plugins. Can we care? Can we handle the whole education thing maybe before that? Over the past few days, former President Jimmy Carter lying in repose at the Carter Presidential Library. What's that been like? And joining us right now to talk about that from the Carter Center in Atlanta, CBS News correspondent Jim Krasula. Jim, hi, it's Paul here in Connecticut. Good afternoon. How are you?
Hi, Paul. Good to talk to you. Happy New Year.
You too, Jim. Thank you once again. Jim, what's that like? How have the crowds been there? I would imagine it's got to be a pretty revered setting there. Describe it for my listeners.
Yeah, that's right. One of the things that has struck me the past 2 days is as thousands of people have lined up to go past the flag-draped coffin of Jimmy Carter is almost to a person, I'd say, Paul, and I've talked to dozens and dozens of people, the enormous respect they all have for Jimmy Carter. There's also a lot of pride here in the fact that Jimmy Carter was a native son, the only Georgian to ever be elected president. A lot of people have commented that about that to me as well. One of the striking things too, Paul, I've noticed is various languages being spoken among the people outside the Carter Center. And I think, at least to me, Paul, that's an indication of the respect he earned worldwide.
Yeah, and you know, Jim, the first thing, and I said this doing shows when we had learned he passed away, Jimmy Carter, I think, is probably the only president, Jim, past or present, who knows, maybe even future, where the first thing out of a lot of people's mouths are not stuff he did politically. There was some controversy there, but nice guy, or seemed like a nice guy, or I really admired what he did afterwards. I don't know if we're ever going to see that again in U.S. politics.
Well, perhaps not. That's what people, when they talk about Jimmy Carter's legacy, at least those I've spoken to here in Atlanta, they mention what a humanitarian he was, how he reached out, how he wanted to help people, certainly the disenfranchised in other parts of the world. And again, they talk about that, and many people very moved. For many, they say this probably was a once-in-a-lifetime experience for them, and they found it to be very, very moving.
And, Jim, what happens now? What is the rough timetable now for Mr. Carter's remains going to D.C. and then, I guess, going back to Georgia? How's that going to shake out?
His body will continue to lie in repose at the Carter Presidential Center, Paul, overnight, and then early tomorrow morning, about 6 to 7 a.m. They're going to stop that, end that. There'll be a ceremony, and his body will be taken to what was Dobbins Air Force Base on the northwest edge of Atlanta. It's now Dobbins Air Reserve Base, for a two-hour flight aboard a special Air Mission 39 in tribute to his 39th presidency. He'll be taking a two-hour flight up to Joint Base Andrews outside Washington, D.C. for 2 days of events, including lying in state at the Capitol Rotunda, and then culminating in D.C. on Thursday with an official state funeral at National Cathedral. His body will then be flown back here to Georgia for a private service at his beloved Maranatha Baptist Church in his small hometown, only 600 people there, Paul, in Plains, Georgia. And then he will be laid to rest beside his wife, Rosalind, just outside the house that they built in 1961, a very modest home, only two bedrooms. Mm. The Carters, by the way, have gifted that, deeded that to the National Park Service, Paul. They will take it over, and it will eventually be open to the public as part of the Jimmy Carter National Historic Site in and around Plains, Georgia.
And Jim, finally, he planned a lot of this. Did I read or hear correctly from you or other folks? He pretty much mapped out his entire services for this, right?
Yes, absolutely. And again, he's been in declining health. He's had several health battles. Remember, we almost tend to forget, Paul, that he had stage 4 brain cancer that he survived.
Jeez.
So again, yes, he was very, very much a part of what's happening and playing out these 6 days that the nation is officially remembering him.
All right, Jim Krasula, Jim, CBS News. Jim, be good. We'll chat down the road. Thank you, sir, and be safe.
Always good to be with you, Paul. Be well. Thank you.
Appreciate it. CBS News correspondent. You've heard him for years on the network. Jim Krasula, CBS News, watching the folks still, I guess, filing by the Carter Center there in Atlanta. We talked about this last week. Jimmy Carter, a unique guy. You know, I think you can. Now, some people have problems doing that, separating the man from the presidency. But I think you can in his situation. Kind of a unique thing. Didn't much care for, layers and layers of security after that. And help with Habitat for Humanity. Now, he did have his critics. Don't get me wrong. There are a lot of people that said, the Iranians toyed with him. his reworking, many people say to the detriment of the intelligence community, fired a bunch of intelligence agents, men and women, said, well, we can do this with electronics, didn't work out that way. Allegations that in some of his religious settings, he surrounded himself with some anti-Semites. His criticism of Israel and his support for the Palestinian people. Again, we're not here to, you know, litigate all that. That's been done in dozens of books and documentaries and far more better reporting than I could ever do. But to me, the interesting thing here is how a post-presidency, in other words, after the guy is out of office, especially in a day where being a post-president is equated with money and a lot of it. Listen, I'm sure Mr. Carter and the late Rosalynn Carter, they were not paupers by any means. But it's interesting to see how his post-presidency is kind of contrasted to a lot of people like, you know, Mr. and Mrs. Obama, whatever, the Clintons, you know, post-presidency, even the Bushes. Listen, some of them want to make money, and that's okay. I'm all for making money. I do it as often as I possibly can. And joining us right now to kick off his appearances for the new year on this Monday, the 6th of January, 2025, after a couple of weeks off. Speaking of energy, Terry Cowgill, a former Connecticut Yankee, now spending some time in Texas. Terry, where if there's any sort of energy in the ground in Texas, they go after it, don't they? Is that what I hear?
There's a no holds bar approach. They know what they have. But you know the thing is about Texas, though, there is a stereotype there.
Yeah.
Texas is also a leader in alternative renewable energy production.
Yeah, yeah.
And so there's an area, and I drove through it between San Antonio and Corpus Christi.
Yeah.
There's an area there where there are wind turbines as far as the eye can see, hundreds of them, all over the place.
Yeah, try that here in Connecticut, Terry. You'll have every planning and zoning commission lawyering that till the next decade.
I think there's two wind turbines in the entire state of Connecticut. That's my recollection. Yeah.
There you go. Terry, your column tomorrow on the Connecticut News Junkie is going to be well worth reading. I've read it. Folks should check this out. Listen, consolidation, we all know it happens in broadcast on my end, and it happens in print and television. And there's a pending sale of a long-running Connecticut newspaper that is famous for two things. They do great journalism. Their Capital Reporter is a great guy. And also, they have been a voice, largely, at least on the editorial page, for some conservatism in this state. And we talk about the Republican American of Waterbury that you're writing about tomorrow.
Yeah, and that's the thing that I think makes this a bit different from your garden variety newspaper sale. And you know, many daily newspapers in Connecticut have been sold or in some cases actually closed. But this one is being sold to Hearst. That's not certainly not news. Hearst is gobbling up newspapers all over the state.
Yep.
They bought the Journal Inquirer in Manchester. They bought the Record Journal in Meriden.
Yep.
So they've been pretty aggressive in doing this. But the Republican American Waterbury is also really functions as a daily newspaper for Litchfield County, and they really cover Western Connecticut and also the Naugatuck Valley. Naugatuck Valley, as you know, Paul, from covering elections in Connecticut, one of the few places in Connecticut where you'll find lots of Republicans.
Oh, yeah.
It's very conservative. And Republican American newspaper was a reflection of that. It was owned by the Pape family for, decades and decades. They won a Pulitzer Prize a long time ago. And the thing is, what I love about it is the actual journalism is terrific. They have excellent journalists, and they cover a lot of stuff in the old-fashioned way. You know, a reporter will go to a meeting and write a story about it. There aren't many reporters who do that anymore. But their op-ed page is really very conservative in a way that I can't think of any other paper in the state that is as conservative
No.
As the Republican American. their editorials, and also almost the entire op-ed page was conservative columnists. Conservatives in the state, certainly in the Naugatuck Valley, think that they're going to be losing a voice because this is, you know, certainly Hearst is not known for being a conservative publication. But they do carry some conservatives on their op-ed pages. But at any rate, this is going to hurt, I think, because the only way to make this work for Hearst to make this work is to cut a lot of positions, because the Pate family was losing money at least the last 4 years. They were losing something on the order of half a million a year.
Wow.
So the only way to do that is to cut positions, and it's just not going to be a very good publication. It's not the one that I'm used to and that you're used to and all the people in the coverage area are used to, and it's really sad.
Yeah, it is, and maybe, Terry, to a point, that's why people say, well, you know, talk radio is so conservative. Well, it is, and I'll be the first to admit that. Partly, Terry, that comes from, and you're a smart guy, you understand the landscape here, as at least alternative voices, especially in a state like Connecticut, are not in op-eds anymore or in guest editorials, at least. 40-something percent of the state, 44, 45% of the state, you know, they get frustrated. And just on that, it is a sad day, along with the local reportage of the Republican American.
Yes, and you know, in terms of equal time, of course, you remember the late Rush Limbaugh, and people would say to him, in terms of talk radio, why don't you give equal time to a liberal or progressive on your show? And you know what his response was?
I remember, but go ahead.
I am equal time. And you know, that's sort of the way that a lot of conservatives look at the Republican American. I would complain occasionally on the comment threads that the op-ed pages were just so one-sided that I didn't find it interesting. And a lot of people would say, we need that voice because of all the other papers. And, I understand that point of view.
Yeah. Terry, a couple of more things, only because you've experienced these. Jimmy Carter, complicated legacy. But, Terry, you know what? In talking to some CBS people and some local historians, it's kind of like a lot of people don't really want to go into the nitty-gritty of policy. It's always like, boy, what a great ex-president. Boy, what a nice guy. What are your thoughts on Mr. Carter?
Well, he was a great ex-president, probably the best one we've ever had, just in terms of his legacy and the kinds of things he pursued. And he led by example, you know, with Habitat for Humanity. He did a lot. He went on a lot of peace making missions and that kind of thing. But you know, his presidency was troubled, I think, in many ways. I love the Camp David Accords. It was a great achievement. And made possible really by the fact that he was willing to get personally involved and that's really what made it possible. And that was a huge achievement. I think the Panama Canal, I think turning over the keys to Panama was actually a good idea. I give him credit for that. I know some people would disagree with me on that. But, you know, he was so obsessed with details.
Yeah.
And the people he brought in with him from Georgia were arrogant. I remember Tip O'Neill used to call Jimmy Carter's chief of staff Hamilton Jordan. Yeah. He used to call him Hannibal Jerkin. He really hated him. And, you know, we all remember OPEC tripling oil prices during Carter's presidency. It caused gasoline to skyrocket. There were scarcities. You remember the gas lines in summer of 1979. And, of course, the Iran hostage crisis, which just killed him. And you know, well, we all have images of seeing the burnt out husks of helicopters and refueling planes in the desert in Iran and something like, 15, 20 dead Marines. It was a really difficult time for America. Yeah. And so I'm not his biggest fan, but I don't think he is a terrible person either.
No. And heck, who can forget Billy Beer, right? Remember that?
That's right. I know somebody, by the way, who still has a six-pack of Billy Beer sitting in his basement.
I do, too. And finally, Terry, in about the 90 seconds we have left, you have intimate connection with Canada as well. boy, it Mr. Trudeau is gone, and then the parliamentary system, people look at up north and to Europe and they say, well, can they just do that? Yeah, they can. And is Canada about to get their own Donald Trump?
Well, I think that could happen. Clearly, things work in cycles in Canada, and prime ministers are prime ministers there for either a very brief period of time, like 1 or 2 years,
yeah,
or they last 10 years. And this Trudeau has lasted 10 years.
Yeah,
I think he's outworn his welcome. And, of course, in Canada, you know, the Canadians don't actually vote for prime minister. The parties decide who their leader is. And then you vote for the party in the elections and the leader becomes the prime minister, that sort of thing. But there is a fellow named Pierre Poilievre, who is the conservative leader.
Mm-hmm.
And it's widely assumed that he would become the prime minister and would become. He's from out west. And I don't know if you know much about Canada.
So he's from he's from the oil country again, right?
Yes. Yeah, exactly. So I believe he's from Alberta.
Okay.
And Alberta is like Texas. Is, it's like Canada,
yeah,
and Texas and Canada, because lots of oil and lots of conservative people.
Uh-huh.
And lot, you know, they have the Calgary Stampede. They got cowboys out there.
Yeah,
it really is. Yeah. So I think you could be. And he is a Trumpy character. He likes Donald Trump, and he speaks in hyperbole and baits people, and he does a lot of trolling like Trump does. So you could see that happen, in which case it would be endless entertainment on both sides of the border.
You saw Mr. Trump's idea from early today, right? Did you see that on Truth Social?
I don't know. Is this an extension of the 51st state?
Well, yeah, he said, listen, we have this shot now. Canada and the U.S. should merge. Because then we could, and of course, this is going, Terry, into serious discussion on CNN. And I'm like, will you people ever learn? Yes, he wants Canada and the U.S. to merge. Go look it up. It's good for an afternoon laugh. Trust me.
Careful what you wish for, Donald Trump, because Canada is farther left than we are.
Oh.
So I don't know if you would like the composition of the House of Representatives after Canada becomes a 51st state. That would be interesting.
Yeah. Hey, Terry Cowgill. Terry, have a great week. Great stuff. We'll look forward to that column on the Republican American newspaper tomorrow. Thanks, Terry.
Thank you. Bye.
Appreciate it. Yeah. So, folks, check it out on the Connecticut News Junkie. A very good piece. I've read it already. Terry Cowgill lamenting, in some ways, the upcoming takeover of the Waterbury Republican American by the Hearst Corporation.